Look at you. Headphones in, totally relaxed, holiday mode has been fully engaged, and you haven't even reached the airport yet.
We are now arriving at Gatwick Airport. Thank you for travelling with Gatwick Express.
Glide to Gatwick from London Victoria in half an hour on your all-new Gatwick Express. Save 10% on easy barcode tickets straight to your inbox and breeze through the barriers. Book now at gatwickexpress.com.
No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio, and I'm your host, Jess Root. It's not the same happy feeling that we've had in some weeks past as the Arizona Cardinals did not do as we had hoped they did or they would do as they traveled down to Atlanta, Georgia, and they kind of got smoked, for lack of a better word, 29-18. Today is Tuesday night. It's Revenge of the Birds Radio, and what we're going to do tonight, we're going to talk Arizona Cardinals football, as we always do. And, well, this is our review show. So today we're going to have Seth Cox coming on here in a minute, and Seth and I will discuss the week that the Arizona Cardinals had. But first, let me tell you that Revenge of the Birds Radio is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading internet or audio content provider. And you can test out the service, a great audio service, a great service online. You can get audiobooks, podcasts. It has about everything that you're looking for. Test out the service. Revenge of the Birds Radio's listeners get a free trial of the service. Go to audibletrial.com/Revenge of the Birds. That's audibletrial.com/Revenge of the Birds. And you can test out the service for a month to get yourself a free audiobook download. Test it out. It's a great service. And so once we get Seth here on the line, well, let me tell you what if you haven't been following, the Arizona Cardinals, losers now of two straight contests, now 9-3 on the season, suffered a 29-18 defeat to the Atlanta Falcons. The Cardinals still are number one in the NFC currently, that the number one seed, although the field is catching up with them. The Seattle Seahawks are 8-4, are now just a game back in the standings in the NFC West. The Green Bay Packers, who won, are now tied and have there's a virtual tie there with a record at 9-3. However, based on tiebreakers, the scenarios that there are, the Cardinals would have the number one seed if the season were to end today. The Cardinals lose the game 29-18, and it actually wasn't even as close as the score sounded. It was pretty much a shellacking. It was a beatdown in every phase of the game, and there were lots of injuries. So let's catch you up on some of the key things that have happened. One, the Arizona Cardinals lost. They lost 29-18. They fall to 9-3 on the season. That's two straight. They hadn't lost two straight since the middle of last season, when they lost in week 6 and in week 7 to the Seattle Seahawks and San Francisco 49ers, respectively. And during the game as well, they gave up 100 yards to a running back. They gave it 101 yards to Steven Jackson. Again, it was the first time in 21 games that the Cardinals had given up 100 yards to an opposing rusher. The last to do that was also dating back to that streak last season, when Frank Gore also reached 101 yards against the Cardinals in week 6 of last season. There were also some injuries that happened, some significant. Paul Fanica, starting right guard, left the game with an ankle sprain. His status is kind of wait and see, as if Bruce Arians was on Sirius XM NFL today this evening on, I don't remember the name of the show, but it's with Alex Marvez. And so he could be out for this weekend. Tackle Gerald Valdir, starting left tackle, suffered also an ankle sprain. He didn't miss any time during the game. He will be day to day. He is expected to play. Larry Fitzgerald, who missed a second game with his sprained knee, is expected to practice this week. He will hopefully return for the game this weekend against the Kansas City Chiefs here in Arizona. Also suffering an injury was Andre Ellington. He already kind of banged up all season between the foot injury that's been bothering him all year and then a hip injury that's been bothering the last few weeks. He suffered a hip pointer during the game. Bruce Arians described that this evening as a severe hip pointer who probably will not practice all week and will be a game day decision. Translate that, in my opinion, that says he's not playing against Kansas City if he doesn't practice all week. And lastly, safety Tyrann Mathieu, who had missed, you know, the first bit of the season recovering from his torn ACL. He broke his thumb and dislocated it during the game. And it was worse than it had expected. It was the worst case. He has to have surgery, and he will be returning in probably 3 weeks. Not exactly the type of weekend you want from the Arizona Cardinals. Not only did they lose to a team that had not won outside of their own division. They were a 4-7 team. You didn't want to lose to them. They were last in defense. The Cardinals were dominated, and they suffered many injuries, just adding to the list of key injuries that the Cardinals have suffered this season. So Seth Cox is here with us tonight, is with me tonight, as he is every Tuesday night. Seth, how are you doing? Glad to have you good, back Jeff. On every week.
Oh, thanks, Jeff. Good. How are you doing tonight?
Doing all right. Cardinals football aside, it's not, you know, the fan side is not a happy guy. And we're going to get into that. This is exactly what we're going to be talking about tonight, is we're going to talk about the game. We're going to talk about the playoff scenarios. Kind of run down the topics we're going to be going through. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm Jess Root, Seth Cox, that is, as we do every Tuesday night, reviewing the previous game. So this is our Week 13 review for the Arizona Cardinals. And we're going to talk about the good. Well, not so much good. We're going to talk about the bad. We're going to talk about the bright spots. We're going to talk about a couple players. One, Jonathan Cooper. And we're going to talk a little bit about Drew Stanton, as well as some of the other play of the individuals during the game. We're going to talk about the impact of these injuries that are going on and then the playoff chances that they have. So Seth, initial reactions to the game. What was the feeling? Me kind of felt, and if you follow me, I'm at Senor Jess Root, SenorJessRoot. I kind of put the fatalistic view out there, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that a little bit later, but after two straight losses and in the way that they're playing, it felt like the worst is happening, and as many collapses the Cardinals have had, possibility of, with the schedule that's remaining, 9-7 kind of looms large in the back of my mind, which has me a little bit worried. How about you? What was the overall feeling when watching that game?
I think the first thing was disappointment on just how everybody came out and played. I mean, you watch the game back and you felt like this was a team that thought they could just roll out and just win. And that's not something we've seen from this team at all this year. You know, that was a little different. It was frustrating to watch, obviously. As, like I said, we've seen a desperate team, a team that felt like they had a lot to prove for pretty much the entire season. And this was the first week that I sat there and I felt like they thought they just needed to show up and the Falcons would roll over and they were going to win. So that's a little disappointing because I think all of us as fans have come to expect a little more in terms of just ability from this team. From there, you just kind of look at it and you have to wonder what's the, you don't want to say the future, but like, what's next? What can happen for this team? What can they do, and how can they improve? And like you said, is this a team that wins another game this year? I don't think it's that dire yet, but I think after Sunday, it may get there.
Yeah, and for me, my initial reaction is they played terribly, and it wasn't necessarily the fact they lost, and it was a little bit. It's got to be honest. After their loss to Seattle, we kind of expected a loss, and we penciling things in. We kind of thought, okay, a win was going to be a tall task anyway. The way that they lost was a little bit concerning, and heading into what we talked about it last week. Basically, the Cardinals could have put to bed the whole NFC with two wins in a row against a team that should have been a relative easy team. Yes, they were a desperate team. That's a terrible defensive team, and they looked dominant. And while yes, the offense they have a good offense, the Cardinals' defense has been dominant. And they didn't look anything like they had. So the loss isn't as obviously, since they're still number one in the NFC and they're still atop the NFC West. And if you said before the season, hey, 12 games into the three and at top of the division, at the top of the conference, no matter how you spell that, you would have taken it. But based on previous play, if you look at how they played this weekend, you're starting to see, wait, this isn't good. So let's kind of talk about what were the most troubling. What are the biggest bad points that kind of stood out for you?
I thought the first thing that stood out to me was obviously the defense. We've gushed about this defense on this show all season, and to get into game 12 and week 13 and see this defense just, you don't want to say fall apart, but I mean, give up 101 yards to a 31-year-old Steven Jackson, not be able to take advantage of numerous backup offensive linemen on the Falcons, you know, side of the ball. And then for Patrick Peterson and Antonio Cromartie, both to just get picked apart. It was one of those games where if you didn't have the Rashad Johnson play, and granted, Rashad didn't even play all that well. He made a great play on one play. You know, you wonder what kind of positives you can take from a game like this. This is one of those games that you watch the film to learn something, but then you quickly forget about not what you're learning, but you just forget about what happened in the game, because there's really nothing to look at and say, okay, you know, this was good. Because when Ted Ginn is your best offensive player, that's a troubling game.
And yeah, the tone. This is kind of the tone, and it's interesting, the quotes that Bruce Arians, some of the things that Arians said, if we like to read between the lines, apparently there were players on the team who believed or kind of bought into the hype that the Falcons are a bad team, that they're a bad defense, they're a bad team, and they just needed to be there to win the game, which is, you know, that's something that pundits and talking heads and bloggers and fans and radio hosts and things like that, those are things we can say because we're not in the locker room. We don't have to do any game prep. We don't have one-on-one battles. So according to what we see, that should be the case. It should have been an easy team to beat. After all, the only four wins they've had have been in their division, and their division is terrible. But it was a very... if you could say immature, which is something that this team has not had. There was an immaturity to the preparation is what it came down. And you, I mean, it kind of set the tone. You knew it was going to be a bad outing when the second run from scrimmage goes for 55 yards. And that really, it was a play that just kind of sucked the wind. I mean, I think that play kind of set the tone for the rest of the game when Steven Jackson looked like the Rams Steven Jackson, not just the end of the tenure at the Rams, but the 3 years before that Steven Jackson of the Rams, setting the tone with that 55-yard run, and it just sucked the wind out of everything that the Cardinals were bringing defensively. And they just, the Falcons moved the ball pretty much at will, which was really troubling, because the one thing that you could always count on, a shutdown run defense, and especially, and in particular, they've been fantastic. They've been elite at shutting down primary running backs. So you get your starting running back, your feature back, they don't do a thing against you. Now they'll give up a play here or there to a scat back or on an end around or something like that, or quarterback scrambling, because those are kind of trick plays when it comes to run defense. But when it comes to, we're going to line up and run the football, Arizona wins that battle every single time. And the second carry, well, and not only that, the first carry went for 6 yards, and then the second went for 55. So they have 61 yards on the ground after two carries, and then boom, that really just ruins the rest of the game, I thought.
Yeah, and you look at the way Matt Ryan was able to kind of pick apart the secondary, this quote-unquote no-fly zone. There was no grounding of any air from the Falcons this week. I mean, Patrick Peterson had his struggles. He was bad. I continue to wonder what it is. I don't know if it's something that Todd Bowles has him do, or if it's just something he is not comfortable with. But I don't know if you noticed, I didn't see him try to press Julio Jones at the line at all. All game. And then, you know, people are saying, oh, well, he's in a good spot, you know, to make a play on the ball. And he's just, you know, it's perfect throws and great catches. And yeah, but when a guy gets a free release and gets into his route without having to be knocked off his route, that's what happens when you're a really good wide receiver, great wide receiver like Julio Jones. You know, and Matt Ryan had a good day. He's throwing some dimes out there. And you just saw them take advantage of Peterson and I mean, Harry Douglas kind of was just toying with Antonio Cromartie for most of the day. So it was just one of those days where everything that could have gone wrong was going wrong. You know, Lorenzo Alexander had a nice pass rush, and I think the Cardinals have kind of found something with their Alexander Okafor pairing as your pass rush specialist, and I think getting Matt Shaughnessy back, if he's healthy, and I know there's, you know, he won't play if he's not healthy, but I think getting him back to being the, you know, best run stuffing outside linebacker in the NFL, Matt Shaughnessy, is different than just having Matt Shaughnessy back. So we'll see what he looks like, but I think getting Shaughnessy back and kind of having that four-man rotation at linebacker, where you have Shaughnessy and Acho in on obvious rundowns, and then you can bring in Okafor and Alexander. I think that'll be a boost to your run defense that has, you know, like you said, kind of fallen off game by game over the last three games. I mean, a lot of people want to point to the offense, and I'm sure we'll get into that shortly, but a lot of people want to point to the offense and their woes, but Joyke Bell, I mean, the luckily the Lions abandoned the run game, and the Cardinals were able to keep him under 100 yards. They did a great job against Marshawn Lynch, something you kind of talked about a little bit, is, you know, bottling up that primary runner, but, you know, Russell Wilson ate him alive. And then this week, I think it was just kind of one of those things where Steven Jackson got against, you know, a team that has been slowly declining in their ability to stop the run as the season went along. And then it just kind of all came full circle where the defense had easily. I mean, even if you go back to Denver, that's just a dominant offensive team. I think you can not be okay, but kind of chalk that up to, okay, that's just the greatness of Denver. I don't think anybody saw this coming against the Cardinals defense.
Oh, heavens. this is one of those games now. They do have talent, but their team defensively, and that's the thing. It was to me, it was a twofold. The one, it was the tone when Steven Jackson had the run. I can see Matt Ryan picking apart that team. Matt Ryan is talented enough, except for the fact that Matt Ryan traditionally has been terrible at the Cardinals. Again, but to see the Cardinals offense, that was supposed to be the game where they got better. There was the game was to fix everything. They got healthy, where they kind of saw they were supposed to run the ball. They were supposed, and nothing. They had nothing. And we're going to talk. I want to bring up the running game a little bit, but I look at what happened that game, and it was just you said it. It's you really couldn't have had anything worse happen, because not only if you put it in perspective, they gave up a 100-yard rusher, they gave up 200-yard receivers. Matt Ryan, I mean, they only sacked him once. It was almost, you know, had over 350 yards passing. So they gave up 500 yards of offense. And then offensively, they turned the ball over. They couldn't run the ball. They couldn't get off. They couldn't keep going on third down. And then they had injuries too. It was the worst of the worst that could possibly have happened. And then the one minor small positive offensively is that against a prevent defense in garbage time, they were able to put together a, you know, little drive and actually finally get into the end zone, which they hadn't done since the first quarter against Detroit.
Yeah, it's been basically two whole games. It's a little over two whole games since they scored a touchdown offensively. So now you're talking about, what is this team's identity? And I think something that doesn't get brought up enough, and it's hard to talk about because it's been such a good ride for the first however many games it is now. We're talking 28, I guess, and Arians is 19 and 9. But I struggled with the idea that we're going to run the ball 10 times in this game. I understand that you were down 17-0, but when it was 20-10, and you got the ball to start, or the Cardinals got the ball to start the second half, you saw them run one play to the left for 7 yards by Marion Grice. From there, I think they had two more runs the rest of the game, or maybe it was three. And I question why you would put that much pressure on Drew Stanton. He's been a career backup for a reason. It's not that he's not talented. It's just that he's not a quarterback that elevates talent, something that we talked about last week. He is, in every essence of the word, a game manager. He's a guy that you go out there, you limit his impact on the game, of how he can negatively impact the game, and you try to put him in spots where he can positively impact the game. And I think the idea that throwing the ball, I think it's 39 times he threw the ball with Drew Stanton, it's just kind of silly to me. And that's not a knock on Arians or anything of that nature. It's just, I feel like this team sometimes when they look at, you look at where the game started and 17-0 real quick. And all of a sudden it's like, well, we have to throw the ball. And it's like, okay, it's 17-0 in the first quarter.
No, I want to point something out. Does this scenario seem familiar? Does this seem like another coach we've seen? Wait. Ken Whisenhunt had the same thing happen. Only that, in fairness to Ken, his running game was terrible. Why would you run? I mean, between the blocking schemes and the running backs, that was one of the big things that Cardinals fans had an issue with, is how quickly Whisenhunt would abandon the run. Aaron did the same thing. And I'm interested in seeing, now that we're starting to see some imperfections, now that you have a couple of losses, is Arians going to start, are fans going to start seeing Arians in the same way that they saw Whisenhunt for his flaws as a coach, or at least perceived flaws? Because, mind you, as fans, we don't see the whole thing. We don't see it all. We don't understand everything that goes on with game planning or why things happen when they're good football decisions. But on the surface, we think, well, duh, run the ball more. They rushed the ball three times in the second half total. They had eight attempts, including a Stanton scramble in the first half, and Grice carried the ball three times in that second half.
Which brings up the question, did they abandon the running game because Andre Ellington got hurt? And if that's the case, then why did it take, what has it been, 9 weeks since Jonathan Dwyer was suspended, or whatever Jonathan Dwyer is? Why did it take 9 weeks to address the running back position? I mean, he brought in Grice, and he was inactive for 5 weeks, 4 weeks, and then you brought in Bush. So if you didn't trust anybody outside of Ellington, then why has it taken so long to find somebody else? Those are just questions I have, just kind of watching this season as it's kind of hit this bump in the road. And those are the questions that come to mind. How are you so quick to abandon the running game? And if it was because Ellington was out, then why don't you have a guy back there that you can trust to carry the load? Because, I mean, injuries happen all the time. And you and I have talked about this a number of times. Most teams don't just have a single back to be the guy. I mean, even a guy like DeMarco Murray, he was down one game, and the Cowboys just kept running the ball. It's not like they abandoned their plan at all. It's just a question I have. Like,
sorry about that. I had a cough. But when it comes to, I see that it's really interesting. Coming into this season, you get the very sense that Bruce Arians really trusted two running backs, Jonathan Dwyer, and you saw it from the preseason. Stephon Taylor started number two in the depth chart, but he just gradually disappeared. He just gradually disappeared down the depth chart. And Andre Ellington, and that's because, excuse me just a second. And that's because they kind of changed their offense, at least the running scheme, because of Andre Ellington. Ellington is the type of player who's, I guess, would you say that he's a player, the type of player that Arians never had in any offense he had before? Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I think going back over it, I haven't seen anybody quite like him.
And so they kind of changed their philosophy with the running game. Now, yes, they're doing some things that are that's kind of frustrating the fans, because they use him like a regular running back for a lot of carries. But at the same time, so they kind of changed things around. They featured their offense up. The offense is, they talked in the offseason about how they are. He's going to be kind of featured in the offense. And that, in reality, if you look at how things have gone this season offensively, the play of Ellington is kind of how the offense goes. And so they were leaning on Ellington a whole bunch. When they did that, they really didn't have a replacement for it. So they got Grice. You can tell they don't quite trust Grice. I mean, he did a couple of nice things. It'll be interesting to see what he does after a full week of practice, because I doubt Ellington will play. But yeah, that's a good question. Why didn't they get another running back? Probably because there wasn't a guy out there that he trusted. I mean, you look at when they end up picking up Michael Bush. I mean, goodness, look at what Bush has done. I mean, last year he averaged 3.1 yards a carry. In fairness to Bush, people I've talked to said it was really unfair kind of how they used him, because it was more or less, it's not exactly what the snap counts say, but more or less, when Chicago put Bush in the game, they were running the ball. And so when defenses saw that personnel change, all they had to do was go, oh, let's put 8 or 9 in the box, because guess who's going to get the ball? But yeah, it's puzzling, especially why you wouldn't. I mean, as much as we saw from Rashard Mendenhall, which wasn't a whole lot, Stephon Taylor isn't a significant downgrade from Rashard Mendenhall, yet they kept feeding him the ball and feeding the ball and feeding the ball. The same thing with Jonathan Dwyer. Yes, he's got a little bit better burst, but from what you see production-wise, it's kind of the same player, yet they were giving, Dwyer 8 or 9 carries a game and Stephon Taylor's touching the ball at 3. It's puzzling how what goes through, why the change that's going through. I know you guys, those of you who are listening, again, this is Revenge of the Birds Radio talking Arizona Cardinals football. I forgot to mention, if any of you happen to be listening live, I know we don't give very many live listeners. Almost all of our listens come via download, and I thank you all. We both thank you all for listening, however it is that you listen, whether it be through the website Revenge of the Birds, whether you come across because you are a Blog Talk Radio frequenter, or whether you get the show via Stitcher Radio or iTunes. We appreciate however you do it. But if you happen to be listening live and want to call in, give us a call, 646-478-3787. You can give us your take on the loss or just a question or a comment. And if you have a comment and you don't want to call in, you can reach us via Twitter. Tweet at me at Senor Just Root or at Revenge of Birds. I just saw Sean's tweet. He's someone get Jess a glass of water. I'm good now, Sean. It's okay. It's all right. I have recovered. But let's talk a little bit about we've been dumping on the Cardinals, and there's reason, so it kind of feels weird. So let's talk about the bright spots. What are some of the bright spots that we saw? We've been talking about the run defense and how bad it was. I'm going to point out a bright spot right there. If you take away the one run, and I already pointed out that kind of set the tone for the whole game, which was really bad timing, but the Cardinals weren't getting gashed the entire game. It was the one run, and it kind of set the tone from here on out. But he had Steven Jackson. He had 101 yards on 101 on 18 carries. So, and then in the end, so he's 5.6 yards. So you can't really take out the thing. But if you put into perspective, take out that one terrible play, and so you go from that. So he's got 17 carries for 46 yards, which is 2.7 yards per carry, which is a very running back. That's a very normal number that the Cardinals have been giving up to running backs, giving up, 2.7 yards a carry. And so the issue was, is that was a big time play that kind of set the tone the rest of the way. Now, it didn't help. I mean, the pass defense wasn't any good. But we kind of saw in a microcosm, that was like the Denver game again, when they were able to run the ball, and then Matt Ryan he's not the same level of Peyton Manning, but he's a skilled enough quarterback to be able to pick apart a defense if there's any sort of lack of coverage or lack of technique down the field. And so if you look at the whole numbers, 142 yards total that the Cardinals allowed, take that one play out, and it then becomes 87 yards on 33 carries, which is a very manageable number. The problem was you did have that one big play. Obviously, another bright spot would be the one play of Rashad Johnson, who now apparently loves playing against Matt Ryan. I believe it is now four career interceptions against him in three straight games against the Falcons in which he has an interception. For you, did you pick out any other bright spots that you could see?
Yeah, I thought we saw some life from the passing game. You know, the Michael Floyd fumble is one of those kind of fluky plays, and I don't know what happened. He kind of got lost after that. He had another reception for 8 yards, and I think he ended up having only two more targets, including one of the interceptions that Stanton threw. I don't know what happened there. I don't know if that was just kind of game plan or if Stanton lost trust. I don't know. But I thought John Brown, Michael Floyd, I thought they played better this week. I thought it was good to see the Cardinals kind of have some success in the passing game. I know it was kind of a bulk passing day, which is always a, you know, something I don't enjoy, but at least it was successful. So then you had, let me think. I know I had another couple things. Oh, I thought, to kind of echo your point, I thought the play of the defensive front seven minus one guy who I'm not going to mention, but who has been struggling of late in his run game. I thought that was strong. There were some missed tackles, which we've seen more frequently lately, but it's not, you know, terrible. And I think, in general, you have to like the fight that you saw at the end. They never just gave up. They never rolled over and died, which was, you know, as bad as it was, I think it was the last couple quarters, they were back in the game, kind of just back in it, and it just, you know, it played itself out. They had a couple chances that they couldn't hit. That's what you get when you have to play from behind with a quarterback like Drew Stanton. And we're not talking about a touchdown behind. There's a difference in playing from behind with one score or playing, you know, three scores behind. And you really have to kind of alter your game plan, unfortunately, to the point where that, you know, you end up throwing the ball 39 times and only running it 10 with your running back. So I think that's kind of, I think that would be my kind of view of the whole thing.
Can we talk about the one bright spot that everyone in Cardinals land is loving right now? It's a certain guy, been waiting for him. He's need to be free. Jonathan Cooper got on the field and it's now first it was just, wait a minute, he's on the field at left guard. I don't know exactly what that plan was, but he got 10 plays in. I guess it was a couple of series. There were 10 snaps in. Just with it, Ted Larson was sitting on the sideline. And so, yeah, Ted Larson is sitting on the sideline for 10 plays. Cooper does okay. Then the next series comes out. Only then Paul Fonica goes down with an injury. Ted Larson slides over. Cooper's back in. He ends up playing 40 snaps out of the 78 that there were for the defense. And a Pro Football Focus graded him positively both in pass blocking and run blocking. You could see his athleticism. He got out on the edge. He's had him, you could see when they used him to pull that you can see him and he makes a difference. Bruce Arians wasn't completely sold. He said he went caveman a couple times, was fine, lost technique completely. And based on those 40 plays, Arians was blunt. He said, on those 40 plays, no, that's not enough to just put him in the starting lineup if it weren't for injury. So we got to see a taste of Jonathan Cooper. Now I don't know what the game plan was originally, if it was Bruce's way of appeasing Steve Keim, because Steve Keim has been very, very, very complimentary of Cooper's progress and saying how keeps hitting at how he's going to get out there. He's going to be out there. And we see him on field goal teams. But I recall the same thing last year with Bobby Massey. Obviously, Bobby Massey lost his starting job to Eric Winston early on. When they signed Winston, he was obviously going to be the starting right tackle. That's not a guy that you sign to be a backup. Massey loses his starting job. And then all of a sudden, it's week eight, against the same Atlanta Falcons. I don't remember this. Massey came, I believe, I can't remember exactly what it is. I believe it was alternating series in the first half. It was Winston for a series, then Massey for a series, then Winston for a series, then Massey for a series. And then he never played right tackle again for the rest of the year. And Massey played pretty well, but for one game against the Falcons, Massey was brought in. I wonder if that was kind of the game plan, just to give the coaches a little bit of game tape on him, something to critique him, just to get his feet wet a little bit in the place of Larson, because there was never any talk of any sort of injury from Larson. Although everyone is saying, oh, they finally benched him. They finally benched Larson. But I was totally waiting for an injury saying, oh, you know, he has a hamstring. He's probable to return. And that's why Cooper is out there. And it ended up that he stuck out there. But how did you see, now, from what I saw, I'm not an offensive line grader myself. So I don't go back and look, he lost technique and this and that. But what I did see was a guy athletic enough to go out there. And so what did you see from Cooper in those snaps that he was in the game?
I thought you saw the athleticism. Something that we've talked about with Kareem Martin in the past is just not understanding how to necessarily make that athleticism functional. He's a guy that gets to the next level much quicker than everybody else. On the play that Rob Hauser kind of got blocked back into the backfield, is kind of a power stretch to the right, going to go off tackle. The tight end kind of got blocked into where the hole would be, and that's one of those plays that while Cooper was out there, he hasn't had enough time on the field. And something I wrote about, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, that is the difference between practice and a game. Where in practice, the outside linebacker is probably going to let Hauser turn him a little bit because they're trying to run some things. You know, they're trying to work through some things. So when Cooper gets to there, he sees Hauser's number, and he gets between the tackle and the tight end and leads the way for the running back on that play. Where the game happened and the tight end gets blocked back or knocked back a little bit, and Cooper's coming around, and now all of a sudden he doesn't know where to go because, you know, technically he probably needs to go up and inside the tight end if, you know, Hauser's trying to block that, you know, the outside defender out. And then he's got the linebacker, and then Ellington's one-on-one with a defensive back. Or if Hauser's down blocking and getting a hook block on that player, Cooper's going to take out the defensive back, and you're going to see Ellington one-on-one with the linebacker. Anyway, it works. The goal is to put Ellington one-on-one with somebody. Well, Cooper was there, and because Hauser got blown up, all of a sudden Cooper didn't know where to go. And it's not a bad thing. It's not anything Cooper could have done. Hauser got blown off the ball. It's just one of those things that as the reps come and as he gets more in tune with what actually happens in an NFL game instead of
when he's used to the tight end losing the block.
Exactly. And that's the thing, is it's one of those things that, you know, Ryan Riddle really put it well in those tweets I, you know, posted. You can look good in practice, and this might be, you know, kind of where the disconnect is between Keim and Arians and the whole Cooper thing, is he probably does look good in practice because Hauser probably gets the hook block, or Hauser probably, you know, turns the guy out, and Cooper is the fullback, theoretically, coming through the hole and leading the way for the running back. In the game, there's somebody else collecting a paycheck across the line from Hauser. So if Hauser gets blown up, then Cooper needs to know what his plan B is. And you can just see, he got there, he was there, he just had no idea what plan B was going to be at that point, because he's not done it. And that's, again, that's not Cooper's fault. That's one of the little things you'll see with repetition. It's just, it's getting comfortable being out there, seeing one of your teammates lose and being able to work off of that, identify what needs to happen and make a play, as opposed to seeing one of your teammates lose and then you go, crap, who am I supposed to block? Where the hole's not there, where do I go? So it's just one of those things. And then it's, you know, technique-wise, I mean, he was in on, I think, 9 running plays, and they gained, I think I had it down for like 28 of the whatever it was yardage on those 9 running plays. It wasn't like he was, you know, road grading and they were just follow, you know, getting in behind him and running the ball. He played well. He's easily the most athletic lineman. And I think that's all you care about right now, is that he looks like he's moving like the Jonathan Cooper that we saw coming out of North Carolina, and not the Jonathan Cooper we saw in preseason, who was not moving fast and still having some of the same hesitation issues with, okay, where do I go? Because the rest of my teammates aren't blocking like they're supposed to.
Let's talk a little bit of Drew Stanton. Drew Stanton didn't have the greatest game. And in fact, there's really kind of a sentiment. Remember, I've said it since off-season practice. You can see it in practice when just even off-season workouts without any pads on. There is a significant difference between Carson Palmer and the rest of the field. However, when it came to on-field production or what they need the quarterback to do, there was a sentiment, you included said it, and then there's lots of people saying it. There's really no difference. There's not a big difference between Carson Palmer and Drew Stanton. We're starting to see that is not necessarily the correct evaluation. There is a drop-off, a significant drop-off in the ability of Carson Palmer and Drew Stanton, especially if there's any sort of adversity at all. He threw another 2 interceptions. He was inaccurate, and you could see once again that he is locking on to his first read, and something you saw a little bit from Carson Palmer last year, but he's been really good about this year. Carson Palmer has been putting the ball in where players need to be. He's had a fantastic year. Steve Keim, when he was on the radio, he was on Arizona Sports a couple of mornings ago, as he is, if I believe it's every Monday morning after games. He kind of says something kind of between the lines that you kind of get, which it's not an unfair assessment. He says there's 5 or 6 elite quarterbacks and another 5 or 6 or so very good guys. And I think he would put Palmer into one of those 2 categories. And then he said, and then there's just a bunch of guys. Drew Stanton is just one of those guys at quarterback. And that's a fair assessment because he's been a career backup. But the way Bruce Arians has talked about him since day one is that, yeah. And so you see Drew Stanton with any sort of, it's kind of a question as to this. The Cardinals were having some success running the football, and Carson Palmer was playing well. So you could say the running game kind of helped Carson Palmer. Or you could also say that the little bit of success that they were having was because of Carson Palmer, because what happens the second that Carson Palmer goes down, the running game disappears. And so instead of Drew Stanton being able to be enough of a threat throwing the ball to open things up for the running backs, now they're having to rely on the running game to open up the passing game, which has not been successful. And so it's kind of snowballing everything. Sean Church tweets in just right now. He said, with no threat of a run game, you're asking too much of Drew Stanton. He can't diagnose a defense on the fly like Palmer can. Completely true observation. This is a guy, Drew Stanton, who knows the offense back and forth. He knows backwards and forwards. He knows everything about the defense. He knows everything about the concepts as to why. There's a big difference, though, because guess what? Coaches know how to do that, and not every single coach was a star quarterback or star at his position. So he understands the offense. To be able to execute that offense on the fly and when the bullets are live and bodies are flying all around is a completely different thing. So he knows what his reads are, but he never leaves the first one.
No, and it's just one of those things. It's game reps. And now that you've seen him in game reps, I mean, he's got plenty of game reps. He's a backup. And there's a place in the game and in the league for guys that are spot starter backups. And kind of what we've all been waiting for was, can Stanton become the guy when given the opportunity? And I'd say the answer is obviously no at this point. I mean, you've seen him play. They've given him the reins of the offense and said, okay, go make plays. And he's not able to make plays. Defenses are just stacking the box and just daring him to throw. And he can't do it. And that's not a bad thing. Like Steve Kime said, there's very few quarterbacks in the league, maybe 10 to 12, that you can go to war with and feel completely comfortable. This is Drew Stanton. I mean, you look at his numbers in Detroit when he started just three games, and they're basically the same numbers. I mean, he threw four touchdowns to three interceptions on 119 attempts. He's at 190 attempts now, touchdowns, five interceptions. He's, 55% completion versus 58% in Detroit. Any Arians quarterback's really going to throw for a lower percentage than most. It's just what he's asked to do offensively. It's just one of those things. He's had his shot now. He's going to get the rest of the season barring injury, and, nobody wants an injury. So now you have to figure out a way to lessen the burden on Stanton as opposed to allowing him to be, quote-unquote, the man. Because he's not. He's not a guy you can put out there and say, throw the ball 39 times. I got faith in you. We're going to win. It doesn't work like that. I mean, he threw 32 times against Detroit, and outside of the first quarter, was he really that good? He threw 33 times against San Francisco, and outside of the fourth quarter, was he really that good? I mean, you can't get one good quarter of play from your quarterback and expect to win, especially when your defense is struggling like the Cardinals defense did this week. So now it just becomes up to Bruce Arians to figure out a way to lessen the burden on Stanton and give this team, a better chance to win.
And I pulled some stats up before. I was interested. I don't know why I didn't do it beforehand, but when I was doing some writing early Sunday morning before the game, I decided, let me look at the home road splits. They're terrible. I mean, Stanton didn't play well. I mean, in the end, he had some volume numbers and it raised his stats. But if you look at the home road splits for Stanton, he completes 60% of his passes at home. He's got five touchdowns, two interceptions with a QB rating of, with a passer rating of just under 102. On the road is a different story. He's got one touchdown, three picks. His passer rating 63. He's completing under 53% of his passes. And even in the one win, the one win that he got on the road in New York, he was not asked to do very much. Sean Church, tweets in. He gives me a very good stat. He says, well, if you look at against New York, Ellington had 91 yards rushing. Jonathan Dwyer had 31 yards rushing. So Stanton didn't have to do a whole lot. And that was back when he was throwing neither touchdowns nor interceptions. More and more as the season goes on, he's being asked to do more. And he can be successful at home. And this is that we've been talking about this for a while. This is why it's so crucial that the Cardinals somehow get to the playoffs and get the home games. And if possible, limp into the end of the season with the number one seed, because if you have Drew Stanton starting on the road in the playoffs, you pretty much kiss your postseason goodbye. He's a different quarterback when he's at home, whether it's because of the crowd, the familiarity, as opposed to the road, when obviously the advantage goes to the road team. And Atlanta's defense, if you look at it, it's terrible. I mean, they were last in the league. That was a game where he should have done better, and in part, the running game needed to be better. Andre Ellington, granted, he did get hurt, but Andre Ellington has his three good games his three really productive games where he had 95 yards rushing, he had 91 yards rushing, he had 88 yards rushing. Those three really productive games came against three of the team's worst defenses in against the rush. They had in the bottom 11. Atlanta qualified for that. They were right there, I think 24th or 25th against the rush, and they couldn't manage anything. They managed over 35 yards rushing for the entire game, which is really kind of an issue, which kind of ruined things for Stanton because everything kind of, you know, snowballed from there. He was inaccurate. Now, he didn't get a lot of, I mean, there were some plays where the receivers didn't help him. The pick to Jerome Brown, yes, he clearly overthrew it. It still hit Jerome Brown in the hands. You could make an argument that he should make that catch. And if that's Larry Fitzgerald, even it's overthrown like it is there, Larry Fitzgerald makes that catch, not an interception, different ball game. So it's kind of a, you're seeing two things. One, that Carson Palmer injury is really, really hurting the Cardinals. And two, Larry Fitzgerald's absence is a bigger deal than we thought it was. Now that kind of coming back to this weekend, got another home game. It's going to be a tough game. I mean, the last four games of the season, they don't look easy. But if you look at, they got another home game. We've seen two bad outings in a row by Stanton. Can he turn it around? Are we going to see the 100 rated, the passer rating of 100 quarterback from Drew Stanton again? Are we going to see life from the offense and dominance from the defense now that we return to University of Phoenix Stadium? Obviously, the Seattle loss, it's tough. But when you expected to, that's a game that a good team, like we think the Cardinals have been all year, they should have dominated the Falcons.
Dominate might be a strong word, but yeah, it should not have been a lopsided game in the other direction. I think when you just look at it from just the outside and you see how ineffective they were in all phases of the game. I mean, even special teams, they got a really lucky call where Devin Hester was called for a face mask. So, and that turned into 3 points instead of 7. So, I mean, it could have been worse early. You know, you just look at it and you say that might be the one that when you go back over the season and kind of look at everything, that might be the one that you say, man, that's the one that cost us. That's the one that cost us home field advantage throughout. That's the one that cost us the division. You know, whatever it may be when everything comes in. I think to ask this Cardinals team as structured right now to finish in first place in the NFC is a lot. Because now they're not, you know, they don't have that room of, you know, margin of error. We talked about the margin of error they had going into Seattle. Man, that evaporated quick. I mean, that's gone. And I don't think, I mean, I think we were kind of worried, but I don't think even you and I were like, oh, it's, you know, two games, it'll be over, no big deal. But it's gone. And so now it's like, okay, how do you, I mean, you have the tiebreaker over the Eagles, so you at least have to keep pace with the Eagles to keep the two seed, but you also have to make sure you don't get into a tie with the Seahawks because then you have to beat the Seahawks. And I'm not saying they can't, but you want it to come down to having to win against the Seahawks and against the 49ers the last 2 weeks of the season to win the division and, you know, get that two seed in the playoffs. And that's kind of where we're headed at this point. Something you talked about at the beginning of the season, you had this, obviously you didn't, I think you might have had them at 9-3 at this point. I think you had them at 8-4 though. Or maybe you did have them at 9-3 and then they lost.
I believe I had them. I actually believe that I had them. Yes. 9-3 at this point, I had them winning next week and then losing their final three games. only to see them end up 10-6 and miss the playoffs. So please let's not do that. That would be, I don't want to be right on that prediction at all.
Well, and that's the thing is we're at a point where it's getting really dicey because that two games was a cushion. And now you're talking about you can basically say you're tied with the Seahawks because you have a head-to-head game left. So if you win, you're going to be over them, likely. If they win, they're going to be over you, likely. Because, you know, to ask the Seahawks to lose the next, you know, three of the next four, so the Cardinals can lose three of the next four, it's just, you know, it's not going to work that way. So it just comes down to you have to find a way to win this week in a matchup, again, that should be in your favor. Something that we said about Atlanta. Something that you're at home, so that's, you know, there's the one key difference. Well, the other key is that the Chiefs can't throw the ball outside. So, I mean, that should be a benefit. But you're at home. The Chiefs can't throw the ball.
But they don't give up points. They just don't give up any points either.
No. So you're probably going to be in a defensive field position type battle, hopefully. I mean, Drew Butler hasn't inspired a lot of confidence, but I think if you keep this game at a snail's pace, and it's not going to be sexy football anymore. I mean, let's just be honest. It hadn't been really sexy to begin with all year, but with Carson Palmer, I mean, you were talking, at least it was attractive to watch. Now you're just hoping to get through it, and it doesn't matter how you get through it as long as you get through it. And I think your goal is, at this point, you would like to see 12-4. That might be asking too much. So maybe, you know, 11-5. And you want to put in, and that's the number you and I talked about. They needed to be at 11 wins going into the last 2 weeks of the season. And from there, you know, they kind of, you feel like they control their own destiny. So
exactly
that's kind of where they're at now.
And if we look at our playoffs, as we talk a little bit about the playoff implications, kind of the playoff picture, the Cardinals still are number one in the NFC. They really, I mean, despite the feeling that the sky is falling, they are still the top seed in the NFC. The problem is the way they've been playing. And if we see that, I tweeted this, it's a very, I mentioned at the beginning of the show, again, a very fatalistic, and oh, I just realized I did not have them because I remember I had them sweeping the Rams. So no, I didn't have them. I had them losing their final two. So they were, 8-4, 9-4 after this week. And then they hit 10-4. Okay. So yep, that I wasn't quite a wizard and I, but anyway, what was I saying? I forgot. I completely derailed my train of thought. they are the number one seed. We were talking plus. They are the number one seed, and so they were in a position. But yeah, the way they've been playing, and again, I said it's a kind of a fatalistic point of view. Is look at the games that they have left. The way they're playing right now, you can't say with any sort of confidence enough that they can win a single one of those. The Chiefs, very physical team, and they don't allow. I mean, the Cardinals offense playing terribly. And the Chiefs defense is pretty dang good. Then you have to go on the road on a short week to St. Louis. Right now, that's a scary proposition. One, because St. Louis is tough to begin with. And two, that looks like they're starting to put it together. A Raiders team that was coming off a win and the Cardinals beat. They beat people, but they didn't exactly dominate. I mean, they didn't put them away. The Rams embarrassed the heck out of them. Then you've got Seattle at home. You know, even though it's at home, you can't say with any confidence, oh, we're definitely winning that game. And then you have San Francisco on the road. And as inconsistent as San Francisco is, that's still a game on the road. And we've seen what Drew Stanton does on the road. You know, they started 9-1. It isn't completely abilities that they lose. I mean, you look at those matchups, the way that if the Cardinals play the way they did the last 2 weeks, they could lose every single one of those games and finish 9-7. And that would be an epic fall. And like we're talking what it felt like when to go from 4-0 to 5-11. Compound that by going 9-1 and then ending 9-7 and not making the playoffs. that would be, it's really become a real possibility. So it's not just, oh, things are going to get better. They have to make things better. The positive is this is a Chiefs team that the Cardinals do match up well against, assuming that they get things turned around offensively. They can stop the run. And really, that's all that Kansas City knows how to do. Because Alex Smith, he's allergic to throwing anything down the field. And so he's not going to test the cornerbacks. He's going to dink and dunk, and the Cardinals are going to keep him out. They're going to do well defensively, if assuming things get back to normal. But they don't give up points. And so we're going to see an ugly, you know, if Stanton come out to quick start, I mean, it might be a 14-6 game. It might be a 10-3 game. It might be, you know, a 16-9 game. But the Cardinals badly needed to look better than they did and win these two games to have that. And I said last week at 11-2, they pretty much put the division and put the conference away, because you don't really see them losing three straight games at the end of the season. But right now you're thinking like, whoa, not only could they lose three in a row, they could lose six in a row. I don't see that completely happening, because the team has been too good and bounced back too well to do that. But the number of injuries that they've suffered just makes it, is it too much to overcome? Is it insurmountable at this point?
You know, you think this weekend is kind of the game that'll, we talked about it last week. The Atlanta game and the Kansas City game are the most winnable games on the schedule. Again, we both said they're not necessarily wins, but they're the most winnable games you have left. And now you're down to Kansas City being the most winnable game. And then probably, I think San Francisco is more winnable than at St. Louis on a short week. And that just might be the fact that the Cardinals have struggled in that situation. So maybe that's what I'm taking into account too much, but I don't know. I don't think it happens. I'd be genuinely upset, because even with all the injuries and all the malarkey that's gone on for this team this year, you were 9-1. You know, 0-6 is bad no matter how you try and spin it, no matter what injuries you stacked up or anything like that. I mean, the Jaguars won last week.
Granted, it was against the Giants. Come on.
But yeah, I mean, the Jaguars have won twice now. And so do they have 2 6-game losing streaks on the season? They might have one, but it's just 6 games in a row is tough. And it's even tougher when you are talking about 6 games in a row after you started, you know, 2-4 or 0-4, and then you got to 2-4, and then, you know, you got to 2-10 or something like that. You're talking about 9-1 to 9-7. That's historically bad. And history doesn't care about your injuries. History doesn't care about what you had to overcome. History is just going to say you went from 9-1 to 9-7.
And it's going to be, look at the Cardinals again. They thought they were good, but they weren't good at all.
Yep. And I don't see it happening again. I'm not trying to, like, Jeff and I are not trying to be like, oh, this is going to happen. Just prepare yourself. But that's the reality of the situation we're at now.
I'm not saying, oh my gosh, they're going to be 9-7, but the way they're playing, it's staring at them in the face. And now
it is.
And no, you don't want the team thinking, oh crap, we're going to end up 9-7. But as fans, you start looking at the way they're playing and you see, oh, what once looked like they were on a roll to get to 13-3 is now looking like, oh crap, wait, they might not even make the playoffs. And they were 9-1, which, by the way, no team has ever, you hit 8-1, 100% of those teams go to the playoffs. If they fall apart, they'd be the first. They'd be the first to not be the postseason.
Yeah, I don't know. You look at this game against the Chiefs, and like you said, it lines up for the Cardinals. It's one of those games that they haven't thrown a touchdown to a wide receiver all season. the way Patrick Peterson's season going, I'm assuming it's going to happen on the first drive. The Chiefs.
Oh, jeez. That would happen. Oh, my gosh.
Because it's just been one of those seasons where he's played well, but he hasn't played as well as he's talked. And again, it's not that he's been bad, but he's paid the highest in the NFL for his position. And then he tends to push the narrative of the idea that he's the best cornerback in the NFL. And then that happens, and you see games like against Julio. And you take out the 41 yards, and, you know, it's what, 135 or whatever on – or 137 on, you know, 10 catches or 9 catches. Still a bad game, not as bad as 186 or whatever it is. So, but you look at it, this is the game right now that kind of defines your season, because Kansas City plays into your strengths. We don't know what the strengths are right now offensively, because we haven't seen any offensive strength in the last couple weeks. But they play into your strengths as a defense, and you should be able to take advantage of it offensively in some sort of way. If you don't, then you better figure out a way to win on the road, because I can tell you this, even if you beat Seattle at home, which I think they can, but even if they beat Seattle at home, if they go 1-3 and their only win is against Seattle, they're not winning the division. And then you're hanging your hat on what to end the year? Hopefully a playoff, hopefully a, you know, wild card, but you're not winning the division at 10-6, even if you do beat Seattle.
Because yeah, especially Seattle's rolling again. They've gotten healthy. They got, you know, they got Chancellor back. They got Earl Thomas healthy. They have Bobby Wagner healthy. They look really good again.
Yeah. So, you know, you've got to find a way to win this week, and then you put it into just kind of week to week type thing. So this will be a big week. And I think, you know, I think again, with the way the Chiefs match up, I think it's a game that you should see a win. I do. I don't know why, for some reason, I just think that with Jonathan Cooper in and even without Andre Ellington, I think you can find a running game if you stick with it. If you give it more than 10 carries, you know, you're not going to find a running game with 10 carries. It's just, I mean, there's no way. So you have to get, you know, 20 carries, 20 to 25 carries, and let Drew Stanton throw the ball 25 to 30 times. And I think if you're close to that 50-50 mark, you're going to see the Cardinals come out victorious. If you have the same type of discrepancy where you're 40 to 10, it's going to be another stressful, long, frustrating day for the Cardinals.
So in the end, is the sky falling? Well, it might be falling. The sky hasn't fallen. The season's not done, but it feels like it is falling. Cardinals can fix things this weekend if they get back on track, get on the winning, get that 10th win. It will make things that much easier. Because, you know, if they stop the streak at 2, it doesn't look like they will lose those 3 games. So that 11th win will really put them in a good position, especially if it is against Seattle. And if they're going to get a 12th win, but the sky isn't quite falling, but it hasn't fallen. It's kind of on its way down, but the Cardinals can turn things around. Now, another loss? I don't know if there'll be any optimism left in Arizona considering the history that we've had. Would you say that's fair? Probably fair if they lose this weekend and drop to 9-4. What do you think will happen to Cardinals Nation?
I think we're already seeing it. I think panic's setting in already. We're starting to cherry pick good to kind of overcompensate what's been bad. And in reality, it's been a bad 2 weeks. It's just been a bad 2 weeks. Like you said numerous times, they're still in first place. It's been a bad 2 weeks. Let's figure out a way, you know, to get back to not having bad games. And that's kind of what it boils down to. You know, if they lose, you got 3 weeks after that to figure it out. And even if you lose out, you still have a pretty good chance to make the playoffs. It might be harder, but you still have a good chance to make the playoffs. But I think you take it 1 week at a time. And then if the season ends at 9-7, which Jess and I are not saying it will, but if the season ends at 9-7, then you can start to have your freak out.
and then you can just mope all off season, and then you could start saying how Bruce Arians a terrible coach, and because that's just how it goes. And when he's really kind of doing the same things.
Well, and I think what it boils down to is this, and we saw it with the last coach, and maybe we're seeing it with this coach. When you lose the engine that drives your car, your car doesn't really go anywhere anymore. So, you know, Wiz had a good season in that year. He kind of flip-flopped between Leinart and Warner. Then he pulled the trigger on Warner and had two historic seasons. You know, Arians had a good season last year, and he's having a great season this year with Palmer. He lost his engine. Is his system that dependent on Carson Palmer? Probably. And is that a bad thing? Maybe. But, you know, then the question becomes, what do you do in 2015? And that's another story for another day.
And yeah, we'll have the whole offseason to talk about that. Hopefully we won't be talking offseason until sometime after January or February. But the Arizona Cardinals fans, it's Revenge of the Birds Radio. The sky is falling, but hopefully it can stop the fall this weekend. That'll wrap up our show. We appreciate Seth coming on, as always, to talk with me, and we can talk Arizona Cardinals football. And I have confirmed from arrowheadpride.com, I will have Joel Thorman. One of the big wigs at SB Nation, actually, a guy I respect greatly. I will be talking to him. So we will have a Thursday show. It'll be in the afternoon. It'll be 2:30 Arizona time. So if you're going to listen to it live, awesome. If not, you can catch the downloaded version, which is typically what's going to happen. So thank you, Arizona Cardinals fans. You can catch us. Well, definitely head on over to RevengeOfTheBirds.com because that's what we want you to do. That's the greatest Arizona Cardinals fan site that you're going to be able to find. Great content, great community, and it's a buzz right now with all sorts of stuff, both good and bad, just because that's how the Cardinals fans community is. Now, as for the show, you can download the show on iTunes. You can subscribe to it there. You can subscribe to it, Stitcher Radio, or you can follow it here at blogtalkradio.com. Arizona Cardinals fans, this is Jess Roop. That's Seth Cox. Thank you for listening.
Have a good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.
Introducing summer-powered offers from Vodafone. Right now, when you choose our SIM-only offer for just £17 a month, you'll get double data, a huge 10 gigs. Check out all our summer-powered offers in store or visit vodafone.co.uk. Vodafone, power to you.
Offer ends 16th of August. Minimum term agreement, credit check and terms apply. Each April, your bundle price will increase by an amount equal to the RPI rate published in March of that year. See vodafone.co.uk/RPI.